Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm excited because I have another founder. I have Stefan Seltz-Oxmacher. Now, that's a tough name, and I think I came close. Did I do all right, Stefan?
Yeah, you did perfect.
All right. He's the co-founder of Starsky Robotics. It's one of those, you know, when I hear that name, you know, I just, you know, back in my generation, because I'm old, I think of like Bionics. And then I think of the show, oh, golly, Jim Caviezel was on, where they had, you know, where they could see everything from like space and dictate everything. I forgot what the name of that show was. So tell me, how did you end up being an entrepreneur as opposed to an employee?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I had, I'd never thought that I could start a company. It always kind of seemed like this impossible, amazing, out of reach idea. And I kept on meeting people who had, and to be honest, kind of the secret was none of them were as impressive as you wanted them to be. All of them at the end of the day were people. They said things, they did things, they excreted. They were fully less than perfect, many of whom went on and did amazing things, which really lowered the seeming bar to be an entrepreneur. And one day I kind of stumbled upon this idea that seemed better than anything I'd ever thought of before. And that seemed like the type of thing worth actually going after and chasing.
So what were you doing prior to being an entrepreneur? Give me what you were doing the year prior to that.
Yeah, so I'd worked in a couple of different startups. And in the year prior to that—
I love that. I'm going to pause you right there just for 1 second. If you ever get the opportunity to work in a startup, that is your college education of how to start a business. I mean, if ever you have the choice, you can go to Harvard.
Yep.
You can go with ground level on a startup. Assuming you, in your mind, you think you might want to be an entrepreneur, there is no greater experience. Statistically, now I've interviewed a lot of founders, but the ones that have worked with startups on the ground floor all launched successful businesses at some point. Now I'm going to give it back to you.
Yep. I mean, so I think you said it better than I could have. Working at other startups was a great education for it. And for about two and a half years before starting Starsky, I was working at a selective co-working space where my job was to interview 4 to 5 founders a day and sell the ones that we really liked on joining the co-working space. And I like to liken that to kind of like an MBA that I got paid for.
Absolutely.
I basically was just around smart people all the time and able to force them to tell me secrets about how they did things for 20 minutes at a time.
No, and I love it because I tell people, you know, everybody's so opposed to working. I could never be the entrepreneur I am now without the jobs that I've had. One is I got to see how leadership was done. I remember I got to see how you host us, just little things like, how do you host a staff meeting?
Yep.
How do you lead a staff meeting and extract all the key information in the shortest amount of time? I saw how to negotiate. I saw how to not only negotiate, darn near manipulate the outcome. I'll never forget. I was going into a meeting and I was an intern with a really top-notch CEO. And I'm like, just kind of saying to him, well, you know, what do you think of the outcome's going to be today? He goes, well, I know the outcome. I'm like, well, how can you know the outcome? They haven't voted yet. He goes, Sean, I don't ever go to a meeting that I don't know the outcome. And it hit me. I was like, that's genius. Like, where do you learn that at? You know, it's incredible.
I think there's a thing where if you work at a really large corporation, the people who are in charge are, especially if you're young, they're usually meaningfully older than you. They've usually been in the organization meaningfully longer. So maybe you're 25 and the nearest person who's kind of a boss might be 40, might be 45. And because of that age differential, you might assume that there's a whole set of secret knowledge that they happen to have that you just, you know, you missed that class, or because you haven't been working for 15 years, you haven't seen. In a startup, since everything's compressed, the people who seem to know everything have actually only been working at the company 6 months longer than you have. And you can figure out pretty quickly how much of it everyone is faking all of the time, which is really the secret to professional life.
No, absolutely. I mean, I love it. I love the opportunity. So, okay. So you go through a couple of these startups and then does this idea hit you? Tell me how we are sitting with Starsky Robotics.
Yeah. So one day I was going for a road trip to go hiking with a Craigslist roommate of mine who as soon as he had moved in, he started building robots in our living room, which that's kind of part of the magic of being in the Bay Area, is that that's a Craigslist roommate. And we're on the long 5-hour drive back from the hike, and we start talking about neat robots he could build. And I had remembered learning at a...
I'm just going to stop you for 1 second, because I clearly don't hang around smart people like you do, because I'm looking back at every friend I've had over the last 30 years. And I'm telling you, we could barely put together a Lego set together. So I just love that there's so much brilliance in your area that, you know, on the way back from a hike, we just thought about what we could do with some robots.
Yep. Yep. And it was just a kind of casual conversation to kill a couple hours. And I remembered back to an internship I had, this really interesting problem and kind of a broader secret that, or broader pattern that I have, is that whenever there's a career that pays disproportionate to what other careers at similar skill levels get, there's usually a good opportunity for automation. And the thing that I had learned in college through an internship is that most of the trucks that you see driving down the road are owned by the people who drive them, owner-operator truck drivers. And the reason for that, even though a truck costs $150,000, the reason for that is that an owner-operator truck driver can make $150,000 a year. Now, when I say make, I'm not including fuel, I'm not including depreciation, I'm not including insurance, but the old kind of industry lie that they tell to people to get them to become truck drivers is buy a truck, make $150,000 a year. And that always seemed weird. And the reason for that is that driving a truck cross country sucks. It's a really hard
I was
going to
tell you that my dad was a truck driver, and I want to say there's very few professions that I would jump off a bridge, but if I worked in an assembly line or was a truck driver, they would be the two that I would jump off a bridge probably.
Yeah. It is a hard, isolating job. It's bad on your health. One in 10 trucks are involved in an accident every year. It's just a really rough job. And that's why it pays so well for a job that doesn't require a high school education. So I started looking into this, and the reason why it pays so well is really none of the other things besides the weeks at a time on the road. And kind of the initial thought, the Tesla Roadster idea for this was actually, hey, what if you could make a truck remote control? If you could make a truck remote control, you could have someone go into an office, work an 8-hour shift and go home. And as the initial idea, you could basically live on a labor arbitrage, pay them slightly better than they'd get if they were driving a physical truck in person and going home, and sell their labor for what they would get if they and another person were living in a truck full time. And that's the idea that eventually became Starsky Robotics.
So basically, I mean, you say that in such a passing way, but we're leaving out one incredible thing. So you came up with the technology to drive a truck via remote control.
Yep.
Okay, that's a little thing you laid. It's like, you know what, Steve Austin had bionics, but who the heck created the bionics, you know? I mean, there is something fairly incredible there that you just kind of, I love what I'm around.
It's actually relatively not incredible.
Have not been to one of my family reunions.
Well, what I mean by that is that the really, really good startups tend to not be the ones that are making 17 major leaps and they're figuring out how to do 16 new problems that no one's ever solved before. They tend to be the companies that are taking a series of technologies that already exist, possibly combining them in a new way or applying them to a market that hasn't seen them. So really all I was talking about doing for trucks at that time was what we've been doing with Reaper drones for 15 years. Talking about technology that's literally 15 years old and defense contractors are able to cobble together.
So I just want to kind of picture this, because I've yet to see it. You know, I'm living in kind of central Virginia. So yep. There's an 18-wheeler out there with nobody behind the wheel. Is that correct?
So, and this ultimately stems to...
Or do you dress up like a very handsome dummy or something?
So this stems to the ultimate fall of the company. The entire autonomous space is way less advanced than everyone thinks it is. So at Starsky, kind of our peak moment was we did a fully unmanned test on a highway in Florida, and that was last June, and that remains the only time anyone ever has driven on a highway without a person in the vehicle.
Well, I would be impressed by that.
Yeah, but the something like $70 or $80 billion has been poured into autonomous vehicles. And most companies have never driven without a person in the vehicle in a parking lot. It's actually this really interesting space.
So
where
do you put somebody in the truck? I'm 12 years old. So with that being, I always say there are certain heavy lifts that don't make enough sense to make the heavy lift. So with that being said, do you put somebody in the truck, even though it's automatedly driven? I apologize if that's a dumb question.
So basically where everyone in autonomy is at is they still have a person behind the wheel who's ultimately responsible for the safety of the vehicle. It's not a regulation issue.
Can they take a nap?
No, they can't. They have to pay more attention than you have to pay driving. Despite the $70-80 billion poured into the industry, essentially the broader technology isn't there. At Starsky, we were going off of this much more straightforward and approachable approach. And ultimately what investors thought is, okay, yeah, what you're doing makes sense, but these other guys are going to make magic possibly in a week, possibly in a decade. And that magic might be better than your reality. And what we're seeing is no one's able to make the magic. Yeah, it's actually a really interesting space where a lot of people were trying to build stuff they didn't understand how to build. And ultimately none of them are going to be able to ship it. Which is part of why it's so important to start off with something that you fundamentally know how to do.
So what does the future hold for Stefan and or Starsky Robotics based on these huge obstacles?
So, I mean, Starsky, I ended up having to wind down at the beginning of the year. We weren't able to raise a Series B funding. And that's ultimately the hardest thing any entrepreneur has to do is find a home for close to 100 employees, which we're able to find homes for about half of them. Another good chunk were truck drivers and easily placeable. And then some of them, it took some folks on the team, it took a while to find something. And to be frank with you, who knows what I'm going to do next. Whether I start something else, whether I go join somebody else, it's hard to say.
But you know what, you know, again, it's like hearing a parent talk about a car accident their child was in. It's awful.
Yep.
You know, and you can't take away that pain. I don't want to minimize it. Because I can't imagine being so close to something so big.
Yep.
So that's the difference. Like I've had businesses fail.
Yep.
But I've never had something that I was that close to, or I saw that level of potential, because you hit that one and that's billions and billions and billions.
We had a plan where that was fairly feasible that by the end of this year, we'd have five or so trucks that were driving unmanned on the road, on public roads, as often as regular trucks drive. Which, you know, that's about a year before being a $100 million a year company. So yeah, absolutely. Right on the cusp of very big stuff.
Well, this is what I do know as a fellow entrepreneur is you can't hide brilliance, and you're brilliant.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Sean.
I mean, and I've never said that to a guest. I mean, I've had MIT people on here and some pretty smart people, but if you can, on your way back from a hike, come up with what you came up with, there's some genius rolling around. And based on the fact that I can see you on this video, you're far from old. The thing is out. What I say is that, you know, where all the pieces on the chessboard, you know, what everybody can do, and you know what the goal is, you know, to capture the king. Once you figure that out, you can rinse and repeat.
Yep. Yep. And it's been a lot of fun, like looking into new things now that I, You get a sense of what stuff is going to be much harder than you think it is. I mean, I think there's a reason that a lot of companies are started by young people is they know just enough to know an opportunity, and they're naive enough to think they might be able to achieve it.
No, they have crazy optimism. If you want to get something done, hire an 18 to 22 year old and don't tell them that it's never been done before.
Yep.
I'm not even joking, Stefan. I mean, I can give you an illustration. Is I hired a company to help me launch my book, and they were going to get me on 20 podcasts. This was the number one podcast company. It took them 8 months to do it. I took my teenager son, August 1st, he and his friend. Now, they've done some little internship with me. My son is 19. Yep. I said, listen, get me on 20 podcasts. No, I said, as fast as you can. And by the way, I want a couple that are in the top 200. You know, like crazy ambition. Like the other company couldn't even do that. Well, by the way, not only do I want you to get me on 20, I want you to reach out to people that whatever. He got me on 23 in under 30 days, and two of them, one was in the top 10 and one was in the top 200. You know why? Because he didn't know any better. After he did that, we started the company.
I always think of the there's a famous mathematician who I can't recall his name, but he was sitting in some PhD lecture, sleeping in the back. Maybe he had too much to drink the night before. Wakes up at the end of the lecture, quickly scribbles something down, thinking it's homework. Takes it home over the weekend, solves it, brings it back in, and the professor is shocked because it was a currently open problem that no mathematician in the world had ever solved.
I remember seeing that. They made a movie out of something, but I remember seeing that exactly. He solved something that nobody had been able to solve for like ever.
Yep.
It is the optimism of certain age group, not knowing. Again, I just kind of pose that to my son as, you know, I'm like, okay, this is what they're doing. He goes, well, why is it take, you know, his night? Why is it taking so long?
Yep.
Like, and they had done it a certain way, the traditional way to reach out to people. He did it a completely opposite way, and his worked.
And I think fundamentally anyone can imitate that. Like if you obviously there are things to learn from authority. There's things to learn from experience. But if you don't take anyone's high level judgments for granted, if you question when people say, oh, this can't be done, or, oh, that's just not the way that is. Whenever someone says that's not the way it is, you should immediately call bullshit and try to dig in. And sometimes it's right. It's an unchangeable thing. But oftentimes you'll find little nuggets of opportunity that nobody else bothered to dig for.
I always say that's why we have airplanes. Yep. You know what I mean? Little things like electricity.
Yep.
You know, things that I like, air conditioning, television sets. Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, I don't have a brain that works quite that way. I'm really good at taking mid-level problems and simplifying them and making them extremely profitable. That's why I like interviewing somebody like you. And I've had few that are in that where their brain is just, they just kind of playing on a different playing field.
I appreciate that, but I'd be very surprised if given the same set of information, you wouldn't come to the same conclusion.
I couldn't assemble a 3-piece birdhouse if the directions had more than 5 points to it. I am the simplest person in the world. But now, listen, I love this interview because it was different. It was different in the direction that it went. And I think it's important because somebody asked me this the other day. I was doing a podcast interview and somebody goes, well, have you ever... has any one of your businesses ever failed? I'm like, yeah. Well, have you ever quit and shut one down? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. They go, well, how do you know? It's actually fairly simple. A, my expenses far exceed my revenue and I don't see any end in sight. Pretty, it ain't rocket science. I go, number two is customers are no longer seeking our services, which tends to lead to the first problem I told you about. But you just start seeing a massive decline in any customer desire and what it is you're selling. I go, I can go through all the sure signs of disease, you know, but I go, I don't try to resuscitate something like that. I do, you know, we'll do a little bit of CPR. We'll throw the little, you know, things on the chest, but 90 days in, no, I don't try to make something that the marketplace is telling me it's just not ready for right yet. It may have been a great idea that I had, but the marketplace either wasn't ready for it, or it's possible it wasn't as good an idea.
Timing is so much of all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, timing so much of what kills companies is also so much of what makes the big successful people successful. Is like sometimes it's they happen to roll the dice at the right table at the right time. And that's an important thing to know when you're thinking about things like when you're like imposter syndrome or what have you, is that so many people out there, they got lucky and they did all the right decisions after they rolled the dice six times. After they got a six, 3 times in a row, they then played the rest of the night very well.
No. And it's so true because I also heard this. I forgot who the fella who was mentoring Mark Zuckerberg, but somebody of the, you know, who was in, you know, obviously one of the original people putting money in. And he said, Mark, somebody's going to make you a $1 billion offer and you're going to think you can repeat this. And I'm here to tell you, you can't. In other words, you hit the right thing at the right time and everything went your way. But if you think you can repeat, you know, you think the stars will align again? No. And I thought that was just really, you know, he goes, so you're going to think that maybe you can go to philanthropic efforts and you'll, but you're never going to build another Facebook. Okay, just you know, whatever. And then Mark basically said, well, it's funny because I basically had that offer in his briefcase, you know, because and that guy was just telling him because the hubris in us thinks.
Yep.
And timing is huge, absolutely huge. And that is the luck. You know, that is the luck in every startup sometimes that you just – that's why I go with very, very simple businesses. Stefan, I so appreciate you being so candid today on this interview and just sharing with people that you know, you can have the grit, you know, an unbelievable idea, but there are times when I do believe you do pull the plug because you got to live to fight another day.
Yep.
Hey, listen, so what's the one piece of startup advice though you would share with people that you've learned through this? Because I think you have a different lens. And so I'd really love to get that one or two pieces that you know now that, hey, I'd like to pass this on.
So something that I'm incredibly proud of is how much we were able to focus on getting people landed. And I think there's something to that that other people that I've seen this similar situation didn't fight as hard for, where, you know, if you are a startup, you are fighting to the death to win people to your team. Before I ever started a company, I thought it was silly when companies boasted of how many people they had. You know, oh, we're a 50-person company. Oh, we're a 500-person company. You know, it'd be great to make more money with fewer people. Why do you want to have so many people? But when you're actually operating a company, having people is a kill count. It's a series of battles to hire amazing people that you happen to win. And that's really what people are boasting about. I hired 35 engineers. I hired 50 truck drivers. That's really the boast. But of course, once you hire those people, once you get them to step away from possibly better paying jobs, possibly more stable jobs, maybe they're people on visas, maybe they're people who are parents or expectant parents. When things start to go south, you kind of have a responsibility, much like the captain of a sinking ship. And
you are so true. It is painfully true because I have been there, not the scale of 100 people, but you do feel responsible for every single one of them. You know their husband, their wife. You know how many kids they have. Yep. You know which one's got a big mortgage. You know what, you start knowing which one's putting a kid through college. And it's
and
tough.
Whose kids in a trouble spot and need some help and this, that, and the other. You've met those kids. You've kicked a soccer ball with those kids. So I feel very proud that I think almost anyone I've worked with would probably come and work for me again, which is something that I'm insanely proud about. And that's ultimately what makes what gives you more at bats in the profession of entrepreneurship. Really, luck and timing are the two of the most important things. And if people want to work with you again, then timing matters slightly less. You know, I might have 2, 3, 4 more at bats for starting companies and going full on into them. And the fact that I won't be starting from scratch again makes it a lot more easy.
Oh, absolutely. I think you've given just an invaluable stuff. I tell anybody, your ability to recruit talent is purely nothing other than your idea. I mean, I tell you, if you didn't have a good team, you couldn't get that idea to launch anyway.
Yep.
But your ability to identify talent, recruit talent, retain talent, that is it. That all the great ones.
Yep.
That is their superpower.
Yep. And I think that, and ultimately that comes down to being someone that people can expect to have their back when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, because it will hit the fan.
I don't want to go into battle under somebody who's, you know, the second things start going bad, they run for the hills and leave me out there.
Yeah, no, and there's weak leaders, and there's nothing worse than working for a weak leader. I am interviewing Stefan, and I'm going to mess his name up, this last name, Seltz Oxmacher.
Perfect.
Oh, man, I'm trying. My editing team's, like, they're on standby right now. He is the co-founder of Starsky Robotics, and what we really talked about is, you know, there are times when you have even a great idea, and you have something that may seem like it's on the cusp of making it, but it doesn't. And there are times when you got to call it a day because there's just not enough oxygen, which is cash. There's just not enough cash to keep it going. And you got to, you know, live to fight another day, take what you learned and move on. Stefan, I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast. Just so transparent. You have the platform for 30 seconds to, if there's anything you want to say and or promote and or drive people to or anything, It's yours.
I've been writing a number of articles on Forbes. You can find me there. You can follow me at Twitter at Stefan ESA. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show today, Sean. It was an absolute pleasure.
I appreciate it. Again, this is the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast where you get the most value in the shortest period of time. My goal every day, equip, encourage, and educate entrepreneurs. We will talk again soon.